Powerful Mind. My name's Alicia. I'm an advanced sports dietitian and founder of Compete Nutrition. Now, this next episode came about after a question from one of our lovely followers was received, and it was really regarding, if I was just to trust my appetite and fullness, can I overeat? And, you know, it ended with just coming from a 30-year-old who still doesn't know. And I think that is completely fair enough. I think when we're thinking about this overabundance of food, but also the messaging around our dieting, the constant messaging we get around eating less is the only option, the restrictive mindsets, and also the morality around food, we are in a place where so much is changing and so much is impacting our relationship with food, but also the environment is impacting what we select and how we respond to that food and the satisfaction or the contentment we feel when we're eating those foods. So is intuitive eating possible, and is it something that can actually support our performance in life and in sports? So it's a big question, and I couldn't do it justice in just answering it in a 15-second Instagram story. So here it is in a full Q&A format, where we go through really what is intuitive eating, what it involves, what kind of things it is really all about. We also go through the things that can actually skew or impact our ability to eat intuitively, and also the points around what we can do to help regulate our appetite and the foods and the different lifestyle factors that can impact our hunger and fullness cues, those hormones that are so important in those areas as well, and the part that they have to play in being able to intuitively eat, and how sometimes we may actually need to override those things. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I loved doing it. There was such a supportive crowd on the other end when we did do the live on this. So I hope you enjoyed as well. And please reach out. As I mentioned throughout this podcast, information is great. But if you feel like you're just collecting information and just continually learning, but not necessarily able to put it into your life and translate it into the things that you're doing each day, whether that is in training or at work or in family life, then that is where working one-on-one with a dietitian can be super valuable. And it's not for forever. Our goal is always for you to graduate from needing us, but it can just be a few months that really do shoot you towards being super empowered, very confident, and really resilient when it comes to your food. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Please reach out with questions anytime to competenutrition.com or over on our socials, whether that be Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook. We are active and we loved getting direct messages. So please DM us anytime and we'll help however we can. So thank you so much, guys. I hope you're having a lovely time and enjoy this next episode. Cheers. Hello, welcome everyone. Hello, welcome. Happy Thursday. We are, I think, all good to go. Yes. Hope everyone's had a good week. It is a really interesting week, isn't it? Hopefully you're in a part of the world where lockdown isn't too severe for your family time. But yeah, we've had a really good week. We've had some really positive things happen. Obviously, there's lots of different things that shift when you're working in sport, and sport is so deeply affected by COVID. And everyone's events as well, obviously, were really impacted. So really proud of how much we were able to do and complete. But I do often have to check myself in terms of expectation and making sure that I'm matching expectation to also what we had to live through. And yeah, so we've done lots of self-reflection lately. I'm reading some really good books in all things burnout, which is a really cool book so far. I can't wait to share some of the things from that with you guys. But also just, you know, your usual Brené Browns and whatnot is really, really good reading. So please share your books with me anytime, please. I adore reading as much as I can. I don't do as much of it as I like, because I do then get caught between, you know, obviously reading stuff that I love, but also the scientific stuff I love as well. So yeah, please recommend any books to me. I am trying to get through a few extras once we are on holidays, and also a bit of a camping trip next year, hopefully. But yeah, enough about me. Let's get to this next topic, because this topic that we're going to go through, I just couldn't resist actually doing a session on this, because it's a really, really good question. Now, for those who didn't see our Insta stories, I got a question sent through by an incredible human that I love, which was around, If I was to eat intuitively, if I was to eat based around appetite, fullness, can I overeat? Is that possible? Now, as a background, this is coming from someone with a history of eating disorder, and we've got to a really, really great place. But yeah, it's still this really interesting question of actually, can I trust my body when it comes to hunger and fullness? So today's chat is a full Q&A. We've got some really, really cool questions already. So please put through questions anytime. Instagram, there is a question box, or write a comment, whichever. Facebook, chat, comment anytime, and absolutely, let's have a really good discussion. So I'm just going to make sure everyone can write to me, and I think they can. Awesome. So welcome, everyone. So today's is all around intuitive eating, but I'm also going to go through a few different things as well, because as you can imagine, it's not a one little yes, no answer, but I also love that about it. Now, intuitive eating, for those who aren't aware, is a concept that really does break apart that diet mentality and diet culture, if you like. There's lots of messaging that we are always put in front of when it comes to food that we don't even necessarily realize are so insinuated into diet culture and so far away from what we could actually be achieving and what we are possible of doing when we are in tune and trusting our bodies. So intuitive eating really does align to that unconditional permission. It's about having that discussion with yourself often, where you actually do have permission to eat all foods without morality. It's avoiding the deprivation cycle that often leads to cravings, binges, and then the often associated with that, the guilt or anxiety that comes from there. And that unconditional permission is really simple in the way that it can be a really simple sentence of, I am absolutely able to have this chocolate or cake or whatever it is, but do I really want it? And how much do I want? And am I hungry? And all these different questions. And it's about being in tune with those in a really core sense of it just becoming autopilot by the end. That removing morality piece is around changing how we talk around food. And for those of you who follow our baby-led feeding page on Instagram, you'll know that we talk about this all the time. How we talk about food, particularly for our generation who has been so ingrained in diet culture, can very quickly become a fear and a issue when it comes to how we talk to kids around food and really instilling those good and bad types of thoughts, putting morality into food and self-worth into food very early on. And so I talk a lot about that alongside my sidekick Kez in terms of kid eating, but within that there's a lot of self-reflection and a lot of thoughts and noticing that goes on from the adult or the parent as well. And the parents are often all of you guys. So there will be times where I'm talking about this and it can be a little bit challenging because I think a lot of us can have food rules that we don't even realize we have. I know I was definitely in that place. I think back to 10 years ago and I don't think I realized at that time of how many food rules I had. And it does take a lot of time to break those down or at least challenge them without judgment, to just start to notice and be curious to then move through. Now, eating intuitively is also, which, you know, really is where that question came from, around listening to our appetite and fullness cues. So it is around not just, you know, giving permission to eat and making sure that we're removing that morality of food, but also getting in tune with, say, feeling of fullness. So trusting your body to let you know when you are comfortably full is one really big piece in intuitive eating. It's also around that satisfaction side. So eating what you want at that time, what you feel like, but also in the environment that's going to really allow you to feel content and satisfied and in a really good place when it comes to food, but also what you choose later on after that meal as well. And I've really kind of pointed towards this already in the discussion, but it's also the ability to notice with kindness. Now, when we start to eat intuitively, you will notice things, you will notice feelings, and it's really important to notice those emotions and notice those feelings without judgment. So, for example, the really big, I think, thing that's pushed on us is often the restriction piece. And I think most of us who have ever tried to diet or lose weight or reduce what we're eating will know the feeling of restriction and also the feeling of restriction that can lead to a loss of control. Or the other way from that is restriction gives a false sense of control. So there's a few areas there that are a really big topic in itself, but that's kind of a really big overview. But also, I think so often the discussions around emotional eating come in, or binge eating and all these types of things. Now, a really big thing that can happen, obviously, with emotions are we want to numb those emotions or distract from those emotions. Now, food, if that's the main crutch that you go to deal with those emotions in terms of numbing out or distracting yourself from them, are not going to resolve those issues, whether that be stress, anxiety, loneliness, boredom, all of those emotions. So often food can be that quick fix, but really all that's doing is numbing out and distracting. To get to that core root cause, we do need to delve so much further into that emotion. And that's where dietitians work so closely with psychologists to ensure that we're not just looking at food. Food and calories in, calories out sounds so simple, but there's so much psychology so often attached to food and intake and what we choose and how we react to food. So really, really core part of intuitive eating is ensuring that we're able to do that, and also make sure that we can eat without those emotions, and also having different things attached to them. So that management side of things. Now, respecting individuality, I think, is something I'd be remiss not to mention. Like any animal, like any part of nature, there's an individuality piece to humans. And I get a little bit emotional about this since becoming a mum, because I've got two girls, and I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old girl. And already, you know, they're only small, but already I can see the very big difference in their body types. And one is like this little pocket rocket. And the other one is definitely, you know, stronger. She's got a different build. And I already just notice, and I'm so kind of like defensive in making sure that how we speak about those bodies is equal and with the same respect and adoration and positivity that it deserves, because these two bodies are just as deserving. These two bodies are incredible in my eyes. You know, I'm a mum, I'm totally biased. But I do know that there is a bias towards one of those bodies in terms of diet culture and fit compared to another body. And I find that is just disgusting, to be fair. And I think I have always noticed that, and I've always been a big advocate for equality between bodies, and also acknowledging that individuality piece. But to see two of my kids to be so different in their body shape has just kind of leveled that to the, you know, the next step, really. And I think respecting your individuality and embracing that, hey Sarah, is such a core part of allowing permission, but also allowing you to trust what your body needs as well. One part I think that gets really missed, or not missed, but probably misunderstood around intuitive eating is something called HAES. Now, for those who are dietitians watching, you've probably heard of HAES, and some of you may have heard of this as well. And what it stands for is health at every size. Now, this gets a lot of kickback, right? Because you're saying it's often seen as, oh my goodness, you're saying that no matter what size you are, you can be healthy. This is a really big misinterpretation of what HAES is. HAES actually stands for health at every size, not healthy at every size. So health at every size is really allowing you to honor your health. No matter what size you are, you are have permission, and you are allowed to really strive for health behaviors without that being attached to a need or an essential part of weight loss being associated with those behaviors. So I think that's a really important thing to do, because then what we then get to do is actually allow our bodies to think about, okay, what is going to make me feel great? what kind of behaviors and habits are going to lead me to striving for health and respecting and honoring my health. And that allows you then to choose the foods that are going to align with that, but also really align to those feelings of fullness and satisfaction that we spoke about as well. I think so often, you know, we don't have that trust. So if I say to someone, you have permission to eat all foods, they're like, that would never work for me. Like, permission to eat all foods sounds like my hell. I would absolutely just stuff myself silly. But permission is a very, very interesting thing. And I do really encourage you to have a think about this concept, not necessarily take it on, not necessarily go all in, but just start to be curious because there's a lot that we absorb day to day within our environment that we don't actually necessarily realize we're absorbing. And I think everyone deserves to be in a place where they are trusting their body, and able to consider what they feel like, what their appetite is, and also feel those feelings of satisfaction without the guilt, anxiety, or restriction piece aside from that. Now, that's what intuitive eating is. That's a really overarching, very quick summary. And I feel like it's an important step to then talking through the next things that I guess really delve into what that question was asking. So say I'm listening to my appetite, say I'm listening to my fullness, is it possible to overeat? But I want to add to that question a little bit of also, is it possible to undereat if you are an intuitive eater as well? Because I know a lot of you chatting today and listening today are athletes or active individuals. So, you know, it is just important, just as important to eat enough as it is to not eat too much either. So how does that balance work? How much can I eat intuitively as an athlete or an active individual? And how much do I need to override that to ensure that I'm meeting my energy needs, but also allowing my performance and recovery to be looked after? So that is really what we're going to delve into now. So sit tight. I guess the things that can skew our appetite and fullness, first of all, are the different hormones that are released and in charge of our hunger and fullness. So I think everyone has heard of ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, and no dramas if you haven't. Ghrelin is often called the gremlin because it's in charge of hunger. So it gets a bad name, but it's also very essential. So please don't feel like being hungry is a bad thing. And then you've also got leptin, which we can think of as our fullness hormone. And these fullness and hunger hormones are in charge of really those signals to the brain and the tummy and all those feelings that we get when we're hungry or we're full. And what we're aiming to do is really be in charge and trust those signals to eat in a way that matches what our body is demanding and also needing at that time. So things that can skew our satisfaction in particular and our fullness are hyperpalatable and ultra processed foods. So I'm not talking just boxed foods, I'm talking those hyperpalatable foods that you know in yourself you find really hard to feel in control with, you find difficult to manage portions with, and they're designed for that very reason. So those moorish foods like chips, those sweet melt in the mouth foods like biscuits and cake and all those types of things, pastries, are your hyper palatable foods, and often they fall in those ultra processed areas as well. And what research has found, and I think, you know, in some areas we don't necessarily need research to show this, but researchers also back this up, that we will find it hard to eat intuitively with these foods around us all the time in the environment that may mean that we do overeat in terms of total energy intake when we've got those hyper palatable foods coming in really often to our intake. And that's not to say they're not able to be eaten at all, it's just if they're coming in as a large proportion of our intake, we are at a higher chance, of course, of overeating beyond what our appetite and fullness cues are telling us. Another thing that can skew our appetite and fullness is training load. So I think most of us have been in that situation where our training has impacted our appetite. It could either make us super hungry, swimmers, oh my goodness, does anyone else feel like swimming is ridiculous in terms of making you hungry. Because, yeah, give me a like or a love if that's the case. Because for me, it just makes me go crazy in terms of food. And then you've got other types of exercise, like those higher intensity or in hot human environments, those types of training sessions that can actually reduce your appetite. You know, those really high lactic acid things. So really just thinking about how that impacts our appetite and fullness, it can absolutely be skewed either way, by exercise and training. And depending on the length of that training session, the type of training session it is, we need to be aware of that. High fiber foods will skew how much we can. Yes, I feel like I'm gonna eat for hours on end after a swim session. I am exactly the same, Tom. So when we're looking at the the higher fiber options, that is really referring to the eating of foods that are really high in bulk, but low in energy density. So lots of things like veggies, salads, high fiber foods, basically, that can lead us to feel full and satisfied, but are not necessarily meeting our energy needs. So that's a really big thing that often happens, and definitely one of the things we notice when we're looking at, say, energy availability, and someone may be actually accidentally not meeting their energy needs because they're eating too well and they're eating too clean. I hate the clean word, by the way. It's just using the lingo that I hear so often with athletes, where they are struggling to meet their energy needs because they're feeling full and they're feeling like they're eating a lot of food, but they're not eating a lot of energy to match their needs from training. So that's a really key thing to remember, and I'll come back to that in a second on how to actually override them. But also a really important thing, particularly for the person who asked the question in the first place, is that our hunger and fullness cues can actually be skewed and a little bit haphazard in the presence of disordered eating and eating disorder. So our leptin and ghrelin can actually change depending on the type of eating disorder we have or presented with. And that can absolutely impact how quickly and how well we can move straight to intuitive eating in that recovery phase. So in these times, and particularly in, say, times of low energy availability, because of the change, particular leptin, there will be times where we do need to plan out a little bit. We might need to do a little bit more education. We may need to overwrite feelings of fullness and hunger a little bit as we retrain, as we reach energy availability, and as we heal that relationship with food. So there's sometimes a bit of a hand-holding approach where we don't necessarily jump straight into intuitive eating, so that we're building confidence, we're aligning all those hormones again, and getting you to a place of trusting that appetite and fullness so that you can graduate to a place of intuitive eating absolutely eventually. But it is a bit of a journey, and you've got to remember that if you're someone who has been on diets like that diet roller coaster, or if you've denied that appetite fullness cue for a really long time, it's not going to be an instant fix of, oh, I've got permission to eat. There's a lot of challenging. There's a lot of self-reflection, and there's a lot of that thing that I said of noticing emotion without judgment. So that curiosity is a really big piece of starting this space towards intuitive eating. If it's something that you're wanting to work on, or you aren't there yet with, oh, thank you for the likes and loves, everyone. It really helps with the algorithm. So if you can do that, that's amazing. And then what we work on from there is getting you to a place of, you know, always having these tools in the toolbox of coming back to, or getting motivation with, or allowing confidence to build with, but really allowing that progress to move you towards doing it on autopilot, allowing your body to be trusted, but also setting your environment up for success as well. So there's so many things that come into what we choose to eat. It has a little bit to do with food, but so much more to do with actually what our environment allows to happen, and also what our history and our behavior and our relationship with food allows to happen as well. So let's get to a place of, okay, well, all these things can change and skew our ability to trust our appetite and fullness cues. So what does that mean? What do I have power on? How much can I trust it? And for most of us, we can absolutely get to a point of full trust. And it can be very, very powerful, and definitely somewhere that I feel like most of us should be and can be. But it is just a bit of a path, because there's so much BS that we need to kind of get through and unpack to get to that place in the first place. So say you've got insatiable hunger. which happens. It absolutely happens, right? So there's a lot of things that can occur that causes this to happen. A reduction in leptin, your fullness hormone, is a reaction to many, many processes. For example, it's one of the first things that signals to the hypothalamus in low energy availability that we need to start changing the hormones in different processes like bone health, menstrual cycle, sex hormones, all those types of things. Like leptin is actually the trigger. So that's an important thing to remember, that it's a really critical hormone. So there's times where we shouldn't be ignoring it. It's probably trying to tell us something. But also there's different points in time depending on how we have held our relationship with food, our history of eating disorder, but also our environment and our emotional relationship with food, that we need to think about how do we actually reduce hunger. And it can actually be with all those strategies that we just chatted about. And managing hunger shouldn't be seen as a restriction. Or a bad thing. Hunger is actually really important. It's not bad to be hungry. But we do need to get to a point where that hunger isn't uncomfortable and it doesn't get to a point where we're feeling completely out of control. Now, I speak about this very, very often. And I know I had this conversation with a client today that, you know, we over-restrict during the day. We might set out to be so good. We may set out to be, you know, I'm going to do it today. Today's the day. It's Monday. I'm going to hammer this. I'm going to eat, you know, extra brekkie. I'm going to have just a salad for lunch. And then I'm going to be really good. And I'm just going to have meat and veg for dinner or whatever it may be. But amongst all of that, if we're not covering our needs for energy for our working life, our family life, our training, by the afternoon, there's going to be some serious ghrelin involved, but also a reduction in leptin, our fullness hormone. And that change in our blood glucose level, that change in all of the different things, is going to make us feel like we are completely out of control with our food. It's going to lead to us making poor food decisions, but also feeling like we can't stop eating. And that's definitely a really big part of what we're wanting to manage. We can't actually solve, say, binge eating and that cycle of binge eating or feeling out of control with your food until we actually resolve the restriction mindset. And so that's a really, really big piece. So I might just repeat that. You can't focus on the binge eating or the uncontrolled eating until you focus on the restriction mindset. So that's a really important thing. So if you're going, oh, I feel so bad, I've done it again, I've eaten too much, I felt out of control, I should have just had dinner, or I've eaten too much for dinner, or I feel uncomfortably full, why didn't I stop half hour ago? This is when we need to go, hang on, what's my day been like? What's my week been like? Let's actually focus and unpack that restriction side of things to see if that then resolves the overeating side. But that's like a whole episode on itself, but I'm just gonna keep that there because it's a really important part of managing that appetite fullness, is actually allowing your body to do what it needs to, but also fueling and respecting how much energy your body needs, even if you haven't trained much today. So decreasing hunger and managing appetite is allowing your body to choose the foods that it's going to feel best with. Obviously, we mentioned, you know, high fiber foods are going to feel really satiating and satisfying. Adding more color and variety is going to help. The spices help. All these types of things that actually nourish and satisfy are actually the things that are going to reduce your hunger and satisfy, really. Like, it's really about that satisfaction after meals and satiety after meals that we're aiming for. Obviously, you might hear about things like protein, and absolutely, that's a really important part as well. It keeps you fuller for longer because the way that we process it takes a lot more time. Another thing we need to remember is fluids. If a lot of your energy intake is coming from fluids, we've shown in many research studies that we actually don't then correct that energy intake from fluid by eating less in meals. So acknowledging that fluid kind of overrides our appetite and fullness cues is really important as well. So just reflecting on, okay, well, how much energy am I drinking per day? Is that what's changing how much energy I'm getting in per day? And is that something that I can fix easily? But also mindset. A really interesting study actually looked at feeding someone with the same shake, for example. So it was the same milkshake smoothie kind of jazz, and one was called an indulgent 600 calorie smoothie. And the other one was called a, you know, healthy, probably superfood, 120 calorie smoothie. Now you may think, well, they're the same smoothie. They're going to be exactly the same in terms of satisfaction. But it was actually the smoothie that was called indulgent and high calorie that satisfied more than the smoothie that was labeled as healthy, superfood, low calorie. So a really interesting thing to consider is how much do we actually change what we eat and also reduce how satisfied we are because we're choosing foods that we don't necessarily feel like in the moment, but also don't match what we need and the environment that we're around as well. So just a little bit of food for thought for you, quite literally. Now, I can't just talk about reducing hunger. I can't do it because everyone is going to have different needs, and I don't like the mindset or discussion that always just focuses on less is more. There is a real big importance to also acknowledge the need to override fullness and satiety. There's a real in-between and a balancing act between eating intuitively as an athlete, active individual, but also if you've had a history of disordered eating, eating disorder, and overriding that with different strategies to increase intake beyond what you actually feel like or feel appetite for. So we kind of do often the opposite of what I've just gone through. So we actually increase the palatability of foods. We actually increase the opportunity to eat more processed foods. So often with athletes, particularly those that are training high levels per day, they can get to a point of low energy availability accidentally. Like I mentioned, if they're choosing really high quality foods, high fiber foods, really big bulk volume, they accidentally get themselves into low energy availability. So we do have to put in hyper palatable foods. We do have to put in more processed foods that are lower in fiber to allow energy to be had in the adequate amounts to meet their needs for training. So that's a really important thing to consider. So much of what we do in sports nutrition is actually sometimes a little bit different to what, you know, the guide to healthy eating is or clean eating says, and there's always context. And I feel like in social media land, when we only have attention spans of 15 to 30 seconds for each thing, we do lose context a little bit. So we'll pick up these messages and we'll kind of hold on to these little tiny messages that have lost context along the way. So the other thing to do if you're wanting to increase your energy intake is add different foods that don't necessarily add bulk, but they do increase palatability and enjoyment. So things like nuts and seeds and oils and avocado and all these higher energy foods are really, really powerful. But also, as I just mentioned, we don't actually correct for overconsuming energy in fluids when we eat our next meal. So if you are wanting to increase your energy intake, one way to override that is to choose more higher energy fluids. So making the most of that power point is very, very critical, but also helps to, say in recovery, start that recovery if we do have low appetite before we feel ready to eat. So they're all things that you can start to think about, whether you're trying to manage your appetite or increase your appetite. There's all different ways and strategies that food can play a part. And, you know, I'm very aware that all these things that I've talked about are really just information. So if you need help in translating that information to what you do in your home or your work or in your training environment, that's where you probably need to work closely with a dietitian that then you graduate off working with them once you've got some really cool habits and strategies that are allowing you to match your training needs, but also allowing you to meet your goals and get to a point of feeling very confident, very empowered when it comes to your food decisions. Now, the one thing that I want to go through now is some questions. So I'm just going to go through, make sure I haven't missed any. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining me so far. So feel free to shoot through questions. The one question that I do want to cover first is just losing a few things here. Hang on. Is actually, are there any foods or supplements that can help with managing appetite or reducing appetite? Usually is what people are after there. So I'm just going to move this. And look, to an extent, absolutely. There are a few things that we can insert to help suppress your appetite. But there's also very mixed results with these. And also the effect is quite small compared to other strategies that you can use, particularly around, and I can't believe I forgot to talk about this beforehand, but particularly around not just food strategies that we've spoken about, but also lifestyle strategies. So, you know, for example, that emotion side, stress is one of those things, stress, anxiety, getting to a place of being ready to face that and resolve that is going to absolutely help in so many ways around your food. It is not the diet that's failing you. It's not you that keeps failing. It's really around that restrictive mindset when you're actually not even in a place of baseline when it comes to a relationship with food that allows you to do all these things really intuitively and flexibly and with confidence. So really considering the stress and anxiety piece is really, really important. Also sleep. Now, sleep for me is a bit of a sensitive topic. I feel like I'm not the right person to have the conversation on sleep. Sleep at the moment, for the last 5 years of my life, has not been something that I've been able to control. We have 3 kids under 5. We have a very busy lifestyle, but also kids that don't tend to like sleeping. So what happens when we're in a sleep deprived state is a lot of change within our hormones, but also a lot of change within our energy levels and how we are utilizing food to either stay awake. Finding it hard to actually feel in control around food is definitely a real thing, but also change in satiety and those appetite fullness cues absolutely get changed depending on you know, the stress hormone and the change in sleep deprivation. So just keeping that in mind, if you can control your sleep, please do so. And improving your sleep routine and sleep hygiene, it is called, is a really, really important step in changing how we live around food and behave around food, which is so often overlooked. So yeah, sleep and stress, absolutely to consider alongside those food changes that we just spoke about. And then the SUPs come in. But I wouldn't go to SUPs first, but I know they feel like a really easy, quick fix at times, which maybe this will just be your answer, but there's so many underlying things that we need to look at, not just in supplements. So let's run through them quickly. To be fair, they're things that I rarely actually discuss or utilize. So the research is lacking in most areas. It may have an effect, it may not. It may have side effects, it may not. So one of the first ones, of course, is stimulants. So when you're looking at caffeine, for those who aren't used to having caffeine all the time, that can have a suppressive impact on your appetite. So something to consider. For those who do have caffeine all the time, it tends to not have as big an impact. So that's just something to consider. But I think most of us, you know, with coffee have maybe felt that they have changed how much they eat as a result of caffeine or having coffee within the day. Another supplement that gets a lot of airtime is CLA. The results are mixed. It may change how long we can go between meals in terms of that satiety, but not something I'm jumping for joy at and really excited by. It's just maybe something that you can use, but also not something that I would go for because it's not necessarily as well researched as I would like before we get to that point. MCT oil, gosh, that had a time, I remember, probably about 10 years ago. Oh my goodness, all triathletes were talking about MCT oil. So this has been studied a little bit, and what it might do is help with satiety, so fullness, and that fullness then means that you're leaving a longer time between meals, and that may result in a slightly lower energy intake. To what extent, it's very mixed, and you know, remembering that there's a fair bit of energy in MCT oil is also very important. One supplement that is showing promise is a supplement that's used to increase serotonin levels, so that happy hormone, and it's called 5-HTP, so hydroxytryptophan. And what that does is not suppress your appetite, so you're still feeling hungry, your appetite's still there, but it increases how full you feel after or during a meal. So you'd have it during a meal and it can help. So a few studies have actually shown some really promising results there. A lot still emerging, but it is something on the radar of possibly being something that we can utilize now in the future around that that fullness, not appetite. So yeah, I think that answers that question. If anyone has any more questions, please shoot them through. But I hope you've enjoyed. I realize that I've gone completely over time, but that's okay. I did expect it, to be fair. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me, everyone. I hope you found that interesting, at least sparking a little bit of your curiosity. But I'm sure after you kind of go through it all in your mind, but also test some things out tomorrow, be curious about some different things around food or how you react around food. And remember, the first step to change and the first step to progress is curiosity. If you're curious and having those thoughts and reflections about what's happening, then it's the first step to then actually noticing to a point of making change. However, we need to notice without placing judgment on ourselves. It's noticing with curiosity, not noticing with judgment. So I hope that helps. If that's the one thing you get out of today, I am happy, to be fair. Intuitive eating is one of those things that I hope for everyone. And it just needs to be done in a way that is respectful to you, but also really respectful to your history around food and behavior and stress and trauma. There's so much I haven't chatted about today, but anyway, that's for another day. And I would love to chat to you further. So as always, this is all about the information piece to start that curiosity. And then when you're ready to make progress, when you're ready to put some changes in, that's when you reach out to us and we can absolutely translate all that into your life. So thank you so much for joining us, everyone. I hope you have had an awesome week so far, and I'll chat to you all very, very soon. Bye.